It's the Kim Munson Show, analyzing the most important stories.
That seems to me like government is establishing a religion.
The latest in politics and world affairs.
If you give people rights, women's rights, gay rights, whatever, there can't be equal rights if there's special rights.
Today's current opinions and ideas.
Surveys show that people still really prefer freedom versus force.
Is it freedom or is it force? Let's have a conversation.
Indeed. Let's have a conversation and welcome to the Kim Munson Show. I am Kim Munson. Thank you so much for joining us. Each of you are treasured and valued. You have purpose today. Strive for excellence. Take care of your heart, your soul, your mind, and your body. And thank you to this team that I get to work with. That is producer Steve, Zach, Patty, Keith, Charlie, all the people here at Crawford Broadcasting. It is Tuesday, and my gosh, producer Steve, we have a lot of work to do and a lot to bring forward today in this hour. It is going to be a great hour because it is our show with patriotic historian and West Point grad, former Army Ranger, Ben Martin. This show is brought to you by the Harris family. Thank you to them for doing this. But we'll be talking about our American Revolution, and Ben brings our history alive. And my gosh, if he was teaching history in high schools across America, our kids would love our history.
Well, I kind of stop and picture that. I almost feel sorry for Ben, because, you know, I mean, I'll give you the benefit of the doubt. Yes, they would catch on to his love and his knowledge, and, you know, they would probably go with it. But maybe the first couple of days could be rough.
Well, and that's okay. I actually took, this is how I really got to know Ben, was he had offered some classes, I think it was through Arapahoe Community College, I think, on our American heritage, our founding American heritage. And he just brought these people alive. And at that point in time, it gave me a new appreciation for our history. And then that's why we're doing this show. To my knowledge, nobody else out there is dedicating a show like we do to this. And it brings these people alive. It wasn't easy what they did. And so anyway, it'll be a great show. That'll be in our second, third, and fourth segments. And be sure and check out our website. That is Kim Munson, MONSON.com. Sign up for our weekly newsletter there and email me at Kim@KimMunson.com as well. And thank you to all of you who contribute and support us. And did want to mention, and it's a really great story. And if you want to hear the story, and a few people have reached out to me regarding the fact that Hooters Restaurants has been just a great partner of ours for quite some time. And it really happened when I was on city council in my town. And basically, there was the big question. This was back, I think, in 2015. We had people that were trying to close down legitimate businesses because they didn't like them. And I just saw great danger in that. And I had a friend that we were talking about. I'm like, it's not it's a scary thing if we get to a point where city councils can start to close down things that they don't like. And it's important to stand for freedom. And gosh, who would have ever believed here we are in 2021, where we've got city councils and health departments and across the spectrum, politicians and bureaucrats shutting down businesses and deciding who can be in business and who can't. And so Hooters Restaurants, through that, become a partner of the show, and I really appreciate that. And you can get all their specials if you go to my website. That's Kim Munson, MONSON.com, and click on the sponsors tab. I highly recommend each and every one of them. And click on the Hooters tab. You'll get all their specials there. And when you're over there at the website, sign up for our weekly newsletter. You will get first look at all of our upcoming guests, as well as our most recent op-eds, our most recent podcasts. And you can email me at Kim@KimMunson.com as well. And thank you to all of you who support us. I really, really appreciate it. And lots going on out there. And I did go to the Katie Hopkins event that was last night. There's going to be another one on the 23rd in Parker. And I think that you can go to Eventbrite and put in Katie Hopkins, and you can get tickets there. I would highly recommend it. She has taken things that have happened in our world, and as serious as they are, really put some humor to it. And the room was just really laughing. She makes a lot of fun of herself. And I would highly recommend it. In this time, with all that's going on, laughter is a good thing. And producer Steve, I just would highly recommend this for everybody to check that out. That's Thursday, because she's taken something serious and looked at it through the lens of humor, and it's a good thing.
Well, yeah, anytime you get people to think, and oh my gosh, I just remembered an email that came in here. Let me see if I can find it real quick. Remember yesterday I said, where'd it go? Let's start something we call food for thought.
Right.
And put it out there and literally do that. Well, you know, when you name the crew, you know, that helps put the show together, one of those individuals is Keith Peterson, and he's a very gifted young man. A young man, he'll love that. And, you know, because he helps out, he's a contract, he helps out with the transmitters here at Crawford Broadcasting. But he took it and he ran with it. And let me get my mic turned around here.
Okay, while you're doing that, I'll just always mention
oh, that sounds
that squeaky
good.
Mic. Yeah,
that. No, that's the mic holder. That's not my bones.
Are you ready?
Yeah, he says they are talking about it. You know, what we said was we keep hearing about the number of Haitians on the border. And right away, my mind says, wait a minute. Haiti's way out there in the middle of the Caribbean. It's 2,000 miles away from Mexico. How are they getting there? Well, it turns out, and I'd seen this, but Keith went out and he did a little thinking and diving, deep diving. I had the same question you had on the morning show, and how are they getting there? Where are they coming from? I had assumed they were all coming from Haiti. Not necessarily true. According to Morning Wire, they are Haitians who have been living in Central and South America. Apparently, they had been pooling up over the last, I don't know how many years, but they came to those other geographic locations waiting to go north. So now was the time. So at least now we know, because I was thinking this high density of Haitians is like, how did they get there so quickly? Mm-hmm. No, this has been something that's been pooling up for quite a while.
Yes. And don't you wonder, though, money, travel, how is this all happening? Who's behind this? Because it's a big deal to move that many miles and then be on the border. And public policy, why are they coming? Clearly, they think they're coming because they think they can get in, right? I mean, you're not going to make that trip if you don't think you can get in.
Well, wrong. The number of flights specifically headed back to Haiti are picking up for that very reason.
Interesting. Well, did you see this, though? Biden is going to increase the number of people coming in by, it's significant. I want to say it's almost, we'll have to find that. It's on the headlines here, but he is increasing the number of people that can come into America significantly. And he said it was a campaign promise. It's like, really? You know, one of his campaign promises was he was going to unite the country. How's that working out?
But I hear in this, the budgetary things that are pending, there is a substantial amount of money to get these people a faster path towards citizenship. So he's talking out of both sides of his face again.
Yeah. And that faster path to citizenship actually is a veiled way to say a faster way to get more voters in here to undermine your vote, because there's no way right now that the Democrat Party can actually win on the arguments. And so what they're going to do is come in and flood the elections with people that don't even know about the American idea. I think I just found it here. Biden administration to raise refugee admissions cap by 125,000. This is from the Wall Street Journal. And it says the move follows some blowback. But so I think that's probably why they're sending some of those people back. But that's also, I think, in addition to all the Afghans that they're bringing in. So somewhat remarkable.
Okay. I'm so sick. They're bringing in covers for your couch? No, Afghans. Afghanis. Okay, I get it.
Oh, okay. A little humor. Again, that was brought to you by producer Steve and Katie Hopkins. A little humor here and there. Okay, our quote for today. Let's go to George Washington, since we are talking about the American Revolution. You know him. He was our first president, also the general who helped us win the American Revolution. And as we're looking at this onslaught of pressure and force and coercion and all that, he said, think about this, how he got that ragtag group of farmers and merchants to leave their jobs and fight for freedom, and they weren't sure they were going to get paid when they were moving on to the Battle of Trenton on Christmas Day Eve. Some of them didn't have shoes, pants. I mean, it's amazing what they did. And you just wonder about Washington as he's looking at this army. He said, I am now convinced beyond a doubt that unless some great and capital change suddenly takes place in that line, this army must inevitably be reduced to one or other of these three things: starve, dissolve, or disperse. Can you imagine, Steve? But yet they persevered. They persevered. They were facing all of that, and they persevered so that they could pass on liberty to us. And when he says there that some great and capital change, that's the thing, is God has had his hand on this country from the very beginning. And I do not believe that he's done with us yet.
Well, you kind of painted a mental picture there, the theater of the mind type of thing. 1998, what's his name?
1998?
Mel Gibson is the name I'm desperately trying to come up with. 1998, he did a movie called The Patriot, and it's a really cool look inside what it must have been like when you talk about how did Washington get this ragtag group of guys together to do what they did. The movie The Patriot is really a kind of a great inside view of what it was, the logistics, just keeping men psyched up enough to do what they had to do, and under the incredible, ruthless British oppression. It's really I recommend not. I only say it's not for kids. You know, the Mel Gibson movies rarely are, but wow, it's a great look at that. So. Yeah, Washington, he was the man.
He was the man, and that's why it's great to bring these stories alive. Before we do that, though, I want to encourage each and every one of you to remain strong. I'm going to try to print give this story in broad brushes here. But a friend of mine who is an entrepreneur texted me yesterday and said that she is subleasing the space that she has, and the person that has the lease said that this person had to take the jab, and if they didn't, that she was going to not renew the lease. And I was thinking about it, Stephen. It's like, what if somebody said that if, whether or not you were black, or now, you know, this whole sexual orientation, you can't discriminate on any of that. But here, because people make a medical choice that they would not renew the lease. And so I responded back and I said, stand strong and say you'll be moving on. And she did that. And actually they came to a compromise because I said, she needs you to be renting that space. And from that, actually, the person backed down. And so backing down is pretty important, which that one other thing I have to mention. I know we need to get over here to Ben very quickly, but Project Veritas released a video yesterday, a whistleblower about the vaccine, that actually there are more adverse effects than is being reported. And she actually had a friend that had resisted, and finally succumbed to take the jab and eventually died from that. I would highly recommend you take a look at Project Veritas. I tell you what James O'Keefe and they're doing over there is absolutely amazing. They're true patriots. So let's go to break. When we come back, we'll be talking with Ben Martin about our American history. You will not want to miss it. He brings it alive. We'll be right back.
Home home ownership and private property rights help you build wealth for you and your family. RE/MAX Alliance award-winning realtor Karen Levine understands this. Supply is super tight right now. This is why you need a seasoned professional with excellent negotiating skills on your side of the table, whether buying or selling an existing home or buying a new build. As a member of the National Association of Realtors Board of Directors, Karen Levine volunteers hours of her time to help you build your American dream. Call her today at 303-877-7516. Again, that's 303-877-7516.
You'd like to get in touch with one of Kim Munson's sponsors, but you can't recall their phone number. Find a full list of advertising partners on Kim's website, kimmunson.com. That's Kim, M-O-N-S-O-N.com.
Mine eyes have seen the glory of the coming of the
Welcome back to the Kim Munson Show. I am Kim Munson. Be sure and check out our website. That's Kim Munson, M-O-N-S-O-N.com. Sign up for a weekly newsletter there. And you can email me at kim@kimmunson.com as well. I am so excited about this show. And when I was talking to Ben about it yesterday, I had done the promo on this, said the intrigue of generals. And he'll be talking about both on both the British side and the American side. But I started it off with the Mark Milley, who is the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, and this call to China. So the intrigue of generals, I thought that that was a great way to connect things. Ben Martin, welcome to the show. And Ben, this is going to be a great show. We're going to be talking about generals. So let's go ahead and jump in here. Where should we start?
Well, we should start, Kim. We're gonna talk about the second campaign of the fatal year, not the really fatal year, but the very exciting year of 1777 in our American Revolution.
Hey, Ben. You know what? We've got a little bit of a challenge on the audio, and I know everybody wants to hear every word you have to say. So let's have you guys get reconnected, and I'll just make a few comments while you're doing that, because we want to make sure that people can hear every word that you have to say. We're going to be talking about, the Battle of Saratoga, Valley Forge, and the New Jersey, the second campaign in New Jersey. And as you know, this program that we've done, each of these presentations throughout the year in chronological order, we've been going through the various phases of our war for American independence, which General Washington appropriately named the Glorious Cause. And with an overview of the war, we're going to be discussing, we talked about the French-Indian War, the subsequent British acts, which I feel that that's where we're at right now, where he says they were aimed at taxing and regulating the American colonies without legal authorization. And then it was the American colonies' reactions to those acts, which eventually crescendo into violence, into war. And then the occupation by the British military, accompanied by their subsequent hostilities, and finally, the formal military conflict. And we've been covering many of these military campaigns and battles of this conflict, their significance, and importantly, the combatants engaged. And so as we continue on, Ben, I kind of set this up for us. Let's just check our levels very quickly.
Okay. Can you hear me now, Kim?
Much better. Much better. Okay. Let's jump in here.
Okay. Well, Kim, last month we introduced the rivalry among the three British major generals who came to America in May of 1775. That was General Howe, Burgoyne, and Clinton. And as we discussed last month, 1777 was the most active year for the military engagements in the Revolutionary War. Now, as we cover the second major campaign of 1777, we will see that rivalry devastating effects on the British military operations in the Revolutionary War. The second campaign of 1777 is the Saratoga Campaign, which occurs in New York State. And last month, we spoke about Major General Burgoyne going back to Britain towards the end of the Boston Campaign in the early part of 1777 to get approval from Lord Germain, who was the Secretary of State for America, and for Burgoyne's idea of a better campaign. Of course, this was in total violation of his chain of command. He didn't go through his commander, who was the commander-in-chief of the British forces here in America, and that would be General Howe. He just went straight back to... He actually went to the king and to the Secretary of State for America, and he brought this great plan, and he said, this will win the war. And, of course, he was put in the hero's position there. And so Burgoyne's plan to win the war in America was to, he talked to the King George and the Secretary Germain, and they approved it without even coordinating it with General Howe. They just said, who was commander-in-chief, and they said, okay, we agree. We think this is a great plan. Go back and get it done. And so it consisted of a three-prong attack to split the New England states from the rest of America and winning the war. Burgoyne would command the main attack by entering America from the area around Montreal and coming south through the Lake Champlain Hudson River route, with the final objective of Albany, New York. And the supporting attacks would come one from Lake Ontario around Oswego, led by General St. Leger, and proceed southeast along the Mohawk River Valley to Albany. And the other supporting attack, or again, supporting attack, would come from New York City and proceed north along the Hudson River to Albany. And I should mention that supporting attack will be led by his commander-in-chief, General Howe. See anything untoward about General Burgoyne's plan?
Well, and on that, first of all, do you think strategically this was a good plan, Ben, with all your experience?
Yeah, it was a good plan. But, you know, it would have to be coordinated, and everybody would have to be bought in, because it was a three-prong attack. And if you don't coordinate a three-prong attack, then everybody understands and buys into it, it's just not going to work. And so he goes over there and he sells this to the commander's boss, who is the king and the Secretary of State, without coordinating it with the commander. And we already know last month's presentation that General Howe already had his idea of how to win the war. He was going to capture the American capital of Philadelphia. And we talked about how he did that last time. So he's down in Philadelphia, and Burgoyne's expecting him to be up in New York to support him. And so,
well, and wasn't General Howe, wasn't he the top general of all this?
Yeah, he was the think. He was the chief of staff. He was the commanding general of all of the British forces in America.
So he's not really jazzed with the fact that Burgoyne goes over to Britain and kind of goes behind his back and then puts him in a supporting role. So we can see egos are starting to play here, yes?
Oh, yeah, big time. So Burgoyne comes back. He embarks on 17 June 1777 from St. John's, Canada. In other words, right up by Montreal. He crosses the St. Lawrence River, and he's in the north part of New York. And he moves down through. He has approximately 9,400 men. It's kind of split between British regulars and German Hessians. And then he has about 700 Canadians, Tories, or Loyalists, and Indians. He also has about 138 cannons and three large vessels, boats, and 20 gunboats and 200 flat-bottom boats. And he brazenly sails the full length of the Lake Champlain to his first objective, which is Fort Ticonderoga, which, you know, is in American hands right now. And then the British took it back, and so now it's back in the British hands. You know, we got those guns from there.
Right,
to help
the cannon.
With Boston, right. And so on 1 July, his force, now he's already gone from 17 June to 1 July, and he's gone the full length of the Lake Champlain. And his first objective he reaches is Fort Ticonderoga, and they begin the siege. And by 5 July, that was on 1 July, so 5 July, Burgoyne's engineers start placing cannon on top of what we call Mount Defiance, which is actually a mountain or a hill that's higher than Fort Ticonderoga, and it actually dominates. It's sort of like what was happening when we were in Boston, and we were mm-hmm. talking about taking control of Dorchester Heights. And so Fort Ticonderoga is under the command of the American General General St. Clair, the American commander, and he has only 300 troops there. And he knows he cannot hold out, so he makes a plan to evacuate under the cover of darkness. And this is that same night, on 5-6 July. Half of his force will move by land, and the other half will move by boat down the lake, and the other one will move across land. So all is going well. Everybody's moving out quietly until one of the fort's building catches fire. And then all of a sudden, the British, who are on Mount Defiance, can see what's going on. And so Burgoyne, he splits his forces so that he can pursue both groups. And so on 6 July, Burgoyne catches the waterborne forces, and he captures the soldiers, destroys the fleet, and takes prisoners and supplies. And on 7 July, his other force that went on land is commanded by General Fraser, who is leading the ground pursuit. He catches Lee and fiercely attacks the American forces, retreating by land at Fort Hubbardton, Vermont. And the Americans are routed and dispersed all over the mountains. And when the word of Burgoyne's great victories reaches King George III, he is so happy, he promotes Major General Burgoyne to Lieutenant General Burgoyne. So then,
oh boy,
this is something else. And so now the American forces are scattered out in front. They're running. They're all discombobulated. They're all disorganized. And General Philip Schuyler, he is the commanding general of the American commander of the Northern Department, and he has not given up. So he gets down to Fort Edwards, which is below Lake George, is below Lake Champlain, and he concentrates these fleeing American forces at Fort Edwards, and he dispatches hundreds of axemen to fell trees along the routes and destroy bridges and block and delay the British forces. So General Schuyler also sends out other forces to drive off livestock, burn crops, and just basically destroy anything that can help support Burgoyne's forces. And so Burgoyne is really delayed, and they do not reach Fort Edwards until 30 July, which is 23 days after the Battle of Fort Hubbardton. And because in this action, the British have averaged only 1 mile a day. So Schuyler is doing the right thing. And additionally, Burgoyne has approximately now 8,500 healthy soldiers and 39 cannon left. So he's lost about 1,000 soldiers and about 100 cannon. And he must now wait for food and supplies to come from Canada to reach him. So he can't do anything else. So Schuyler has done a really good job of stopping his drive and his success.
Okay, Ben, we're going to need to go to break, but I just want what you just said about them felling all these trees. I mean, they didn't have modern chainsaws or any of the things that we have now. Can you imagine the physical work that they did, and they knew that how important it was? I just can't even imagine. And it was certainly not a 9-to-5 job. They were working tirelessly and they were effective. But I'm just thinking, just what must have been going on at that time when they were doing all this, Ben?
Yeah, they were. I mean, it's just amazing the efforts they put into it, the things that they did to create the country that we have today.
Yeah. So I don't think any of them were marching over to human resources saying they were overworked or anything. So,
no, I don't
think. So, hey, let's go to break. I'm talking with Ben Martin. He is a patriotic historian. He is a former Army Ranger, graduate of West Point, loves our history. We're talking about our American Revolutionary War. We'll be right back.
With the federal government printing money, it looks like inflation is on the horizon. That is why you should lock in a low rate now on your mortgage. Lauren Levy with Polygon Financial Group is here to help. Lauren works with a variety of lenders to assist you in finding the mortgage that is just right for you. Locking in a low rate now will save you thousands of dollars over the life of your loan. Don't procrastinate. Don't wait any longer. Call Lauren today at 303-880-8881. That's 303-880-8881.
Would you have ever dreamed that freedom of speech, freedom of thought, freedom of assembly, and freedom of religion would be under assault and attack in America? Unbelievably, it is happening right before our eyes. That is why it is important to keep free-thinking, independent voices on the airwaves, the internet, and social media. Kim Munson is one of those important voices. Help her keep independence alive. Go to KimMunson.com to contribute to join Kim in the battle of ideas raging in America today. That's Kim Munson, MONSON.com.
Glory, glory, hallelujah.
Welcome back to the Kim Munson Show. I am Kim Munson. Be sure and check out our website. That's Kim Munson, MONSON.com. Sign up for our weekly newsletter there. And you can email me at Kim@KimMunson.com as well. Thank you to all of you who support us. Really, really appreciate that. And on the line is Ben Martin. He's a patriotic historian, a former Army Ranger, loves our country. He was a graduate from West Point. This show is brought to you by the Harris family, and I so appreciate their support of the show as well. Ben, we're talking about the intrigue of generals. Johnny Burgoyne has gone behind William Howe's back, and William Howe probably doesn't like it very much. Burgoyne has this big success, but then you said it was American General Schuyler has devised a plan to slow Burgoyne down. He needs supplies. And supplies is always the thing. I know that, you know, with Hitler in World War II, we always continued to try to attack his supply lines, because if you can't get supplies to the troops, then they have to adjust things significantly. So that's so important. So continue on.
Okay, so you're exactly right, Kim, and that's what's happening right now. He's down, he's gone all the way through Lake Champlain and Lake George, and he's right there at the bottom, and he's waiting to move farther. I mean, he's not that far away from Albany, and he's ready to attack, but he can't because he doesn't have any resources. And he expected to get all these resources as he was coming through this land, and he knew that they had a lot of loyalists here, and that he thought that he would be able to get all these supplies, and he would actually get more people volunteering to be in his force. But now he has 8,500 healthy soldiers, only 39 cannon left, and he doesn't have any way to feed them or do, you know, any supplies that they need. And so he's like kind of held up right there. And so he says, okay, how am I going to get other supplies? He knows that we have a big supply depot at Bennington, Vermont. And so he sends 800 soldiers over to Bennington, Vermont to capture this large store of supplies that are held for American forces. And when the British forces reach Bennington on 16 August, they are met by a group of militia that American General John Stark has recruited from the countryside, and they deliver a crushing blow to the British. And this is amazing. Now, John Stark, if you remember right, he was one of the great heroes that came into the Battle of Bunker Hill. And he was an amazing guy, and he's the guy that came up with the phrase for Vermont, live free or die. And for New Hampshire. So he's just a great guy. And so he delivers this crushing blow, which sets him back again. And so now these two recent American victories have lifted the spirits of the local colonists, and men and supplies begin to pour into Schuyler's small army. He started out with about 3,000 men in his army, and now in the middle of August, he's almost up to 9,000 people that have come into this army. And so at that time, which is really crazy, on 19 August, just 3 days after this American victory at Bennington, Major General Horatio Gates, who is another one of my favorite guys that I wish was not around, replaces General Schuyler as commander of the Northern Department. why that happens, that was a lot of politics on Gates's behalf with the Continental Congress. So meanwhile, the other British prong attack from Oswego on Lake Ontario under the command of Brigadier General St. Leger is also having difficulties. They begin a siege of Fort Schuyler on 3 August, and on 5 August, an American militia under command of Lieutenant Colonel Herkimer, who's German, you might guess, is now, he's got his unit out, and they're trying to relieve Fort Schuyler, which is under siege by the British general. And so when he's only 6 miles away from Fort Schuyler, and he's moving to break that siege, General St. Leger gets word of his impending action to break the siege, and he sends a unit out to ambush the Lieutenant Colonel Herkimer's relief force. And they do that in this valley. It's almost a perfect ambush. And the Americans suffer great losses. I mean, he loses almost half of his force in this ambush. And so they're kind of ineffective, but they don't get completely devastated by it, and they fight, and they create a lot of casualties on St. Leger's Indian forces. And so they leave him. They just take off. And that's a big part of his force. That's about four-fifths of his force. And so now he has to leave. So Leger has to leave. And then Leger goes back to Fort Schuyler, where he has the force around there that's doing the siege. And then the Indians take off from there, too. And as the Indians take off, his regular forces take off, too. So he has lost his whole force. And so
why did the Indians leave?
They left because, you know, they have many, many fewer people than the English, than the Americans have. And so when they didn't lose so many by numbers, but by percentages, they lost men that were not only warriors, but they were really, some of them were chiefs. This force was full of chiefs and very important warriors. And so they lost maybe 50 of those guys. And that was a big loss to them. And they said, hey, we're not doing this anymore. And so they just took off. That was the way it worked. And so now Burgoyne doesn't have that second prong that's supposed to come in from the west to coordinate the attack with him. And so now he's sitting there at the Battle of Saratoga. He makes it to the Saratoga region, and he's got the guys all set up at what's called Bemis Heights, which is the southern part of this area, and they're all dug in, and they have really good reinforced positions on the battlefield. And that they call the first battle is on 19 September, and it's called the Battle of Freeman's Farm. And with all these battlefield preparations and fortifications having been made, the American positions on Bemis Heights are very secure. The first clash of Saratoga is that battle's name. And on 19 September, Burgoyne's forces attacked from the northeast in three columns. The British forces or on the west or the right flank, the British forces are led by Brigadier General Fraser. The middle force is led by Burgoyne, and the east flank is made up of German and Hessians. A heavy fog covers the battlefield on that morning, and the battlefield is interspersed with clearings and stands of forest. And as the British would advance into the opening, Colonel Daniel Morgan's riflemen would deliver withering and accurate fire upon them, and they would back up into their forest behind them. And then the British would withdraw back into the trees, and they would reorganize and come out charging with bayonets and driving the Americans back into the forest. And so this went back and forth for hours, and finally toward dusk, Burgoyne concentrated his forces and drove the Americans back into the trees, and then they would not pursue any further because it was dangerous to do that. And then General Burgoyne entrenched his men on the battlefield closer to the American lines, and that ended the first battle of Saratoga.
Okay.
So he waits now nearly 3 weeks. Burgoyne is waiting again for supplies. And General
Howe, are they just at a standoff there? So you've got Burgoyne in the middle of that battlefield. The Americans are in the trees, and he's waiting for supplies.
They retreat into the trees at dusk, but then they go back to their fortified positions at Bemis Heights. And so now Burgoyne is waiting 3 weeks, waiting for supplies to come from Canada. And he hadn't heard anything from General Howe, who's supposed to be coming, attacking from the north, from the south and coming north. But nothing came. Now he was desperate. The Americans had received another 4,000 militia reinforcements that had come into their camp. And Burgoyne was running out of all supplies. And so on 7 October, Burgoyne said, "Hey, I have to do something. I can't just stay here. My guys are starving. I can't go back. I could never make it back without any supplies. And so I just have to do what I can here." And so he conducts a reconnaissance in force to determine the nature of the terrain in front of him and if it's advisable for him to thrust into the American left flank, which is where he wants to go. And so the British concentrate their forces and try to drive into the American center, while the Americans, with vastly superior numbers now, were planning a coordinated attack to outflank the British on both of their side flanks and hit the center very hard. And that coordinated attack was devastating. The British left flank was driven back, or it actually crumbled, and then the right flank was crumbling and driven back too. And then with another militia unit appeared on the battlefield for the Americans. It was 2,000 strong. And so the British saw that, and they just fell back, and then they retreated, and they went back to where their reinforced positions were. And a key factor on the battlefield was the bold leadership action of General Benedict Arnold, which inspired the Americans and overcame the British resistance. On both days, Gates, the commanding general, had preferred to stay inside the strong fortifications. He didn't even go out into the battlefield on Bemis Heights, and he wanted to let the enemy attack. After that time, Arnold said, "No, we've got to get out there. We've got the forces. We've got to meet them out on the battlefield." And after that day, on that first day, Gates had reprimanded Arnold for being too aggressive and had taken away his command and forbidden him from leaving the fortification during the next battle. Well, Arnold disobeyed Gates and was even more aggressive and inspirational on the second day of battle. And on the second day of battle, Arnold didn't lose his leg, but his leg was seriously injured. And that caused all kind of problems for him later on, which we'll talk about.
How old was Benedict Arnold at that time?
He was a pretty young man. He was in his 30s.
Okay, interesting.
He was a really young man, very vibrant, very intelligent, and very ambitious. So on 17 October, General Burgoyne.
You know what, Ben? Let's stop right there and then come back for 17 October. This is Kim Munson, and Ben Martin is on the line. He is a patriotic historian. We're talking about our American Revolution, bringing these stories alive. It's so important. One of the great sponsors of this show is Castlegate Knife and Tool. And Hal and Linnea Van Herke are true entrepreneurs. Business is located right here in Sedalia, Colorado, and would highly recommend go down and check out the store, because there's all kinds of inventory that's coming in, but they also have a great website as well. and that is castlegate.com, castlegate.com. And whether or not you are doing some early Christmas shopping or have birthdays or weddings, anything there, Castlegate Knife and Tool is the place for you. So check that out. That's castlegate.com. And we'll be right back with Ben Martin. This show is brought to you by the Harris Family.
All of Kim's sponsors are an inclusive partnership with Kim and are not affiliated with or in partnership with KLZ or Crawford Broadcasting. If you would like to support the work of the Kim Munson Show and grow your business, contact Kim at her website, kimmunson.com. That's Kim Munson, MONSON.com.
His truth is
Welcome back to the Kim Munson Show. I am Kim Munson. Be sure and check out our website. That's Kim Munson, MONSON.com. Sign up for our weekly newsletter there. You can email me at kim@kimmunson.com as well. And thank you to all of you who support us. I really appreciate that. On the line with me is Ben Martin. He is a patriotic historian, former Army Ranger, graduate of West Point, and we're talking about our American Revolution. The show's brought to you by the Harris Family. I am grateful to them for that. Ben Martin, we're at October 17. Is this 1777?
Yeah, this is still 1777, October 17th, and Burgoyne has been forced out of, you know, the attack positions he was in. He's back in his reinforced positions. He waits there for a few days, seeing if he'll get any support from Howe, which he doesn't, or if he's going to get any supplies, which he doesn't. And he finally has to surrender his whole army because he can't do anything else, and they're starving. And so he just surrenders them all on the 17th of October.
Wow.
And this is an overwhelming victory. And the good in that overwhelming victory and the good showing that we did down in Philadelphia campaign, which we talked about last month, convinced the French to become an official ally of America. Their support and their navy changed everything for America. And Saratoga is considered by many people the turning point of the American Revolutionary War. So that battle, and that's what it did. So then we flip back down and we go back down to Philadelphia, Kim, where we talked about last month, and then Valley Forge. And so after the Philadelphia campaign's last formal battle, which we talked about, Germantown, the American Army went into winter quarters in Valley Forge. Even though they were short on clothing and supplies and food, they received a great gift to change their future. Benjamin Franklin, who was over in Paris, sent a Persian officer over to America to help train the army. His name was Baron von Steuben. He spoke little English, and often he would have an interpreter who spoke German or French and English to curse out a soldier who needed it. It was, from everything, the accounts I read, you know, he would get mad and he was flustered and he couldn't say what he wanted to say. And he would call this interpreter over and tell him what to tell him to curse him out that he needed it. And so they chose to train a group. This is their method they used. They chose to train a group of model soldiers so that their conduct would help to inspire and train the others. And they used George Washington's lifeguard as this group of model soldiers. And this method seemed to work because the American Army came out of Valley Forge as a trained and professional army. And then we go into...
So just a question, George Washington's lifeguard, what's that exactly?
He had a lifeguard that were protecting him all the time. At first, when he first chose his lifeguard, they were all soldiers from Virginia. And they protected him. They were like his bodyguard on the field. And they rode with him everywhere, and they were just great soldiers. They were all tall and strong and healthy and all that. But so they used those soldiers as model soldiers, and von Steuben would train them, and then they would model their behavior and what they were doing to the other units. And so they were like the traveling roadshow that could go around and help. And it worked out really well. So then the French had now entered the war as American allies, and they were making military equipment available to the American Army and also the services of their Navy, which was really important. So when General Howe realized that his capturing of the American capital of Philadelphia did little to change the war, he decided to vacate the city and pursue a different strategy. However, he couldn't move the army back to New York City or Staten Island in the same manner they came to Philadelphia, which was by sea. There was too big a danger of the French Navy intercepting them, so he decided they would have to march back. And this presented an opportunity to George Washington to attack them as they marched back to New York. So he followed them until the opportunity to attack when the conditions were most favorable. He decided it would be around the vicinity of Monmouth Courthouse, New Jersey, and on the 28th of June, 1778, which turned out to be one of the hottest days in all the war. So his plan was to have his senior subordinate general attacked the rear of their column as they were marching back to New York, and as that column reacted to the attack in their rear, Washington would be waiting with a strong force to hit them, their main force, as they were distracted by that first attack. And so General Lee, who was captured back in New Jersey back in December of 1776, we talked about that, had just been brought back to the American forces in a prisoner exchange. So Washington had given him the honor of commanding the unit that was to conduct the first attack on the rear of the British. Initially, General Lee declined that offer, so Washington gave the honor to General Lafayette. And the attack was to be initiated early the next morning, so Lafayette had spent his time studying the terrain and developing a plan to conduct the attack effectively. But late that evening, Lee changed his mind and asked Washington to reconsider him and give him the command. And Washington assented to Lee's request. However, Lee had done no preparation, and it was now dark and close to the time for the initiation of the attack. So Lee was certainly ill-prepared. So Lee initiated the attack as planned, but was not prepared for the British reaction. And Lee panicked at the strength of the British response and decided it would be best to retreat. Washington had heard the sounds of the attack and began to move his reaction force up to attack the distracted British forces. But as he was moving up, he saw all of these American forces coming back, running through him. They were panicked, and he just didn't understand what was going on. So he kept moving forward, and he ran into Lee, and he talked to Lee. And, I mean, he was just ripping him up, and he said, "What the heck are you doing? Why is everybody moving away?" He said, "This attack, what's going on?" And Lee could not give him a good answer. So Washington ripped into Lee and then told him to remove himself from the battlefield and he would deal with him later. And then Washington then stemmed the panic retreat and began reforming the army to confront the enemy. And so he split the army into two divisions. He put one on the left side and one on the right side. And then he gave Lee the forces, Lafayette the forces that Lee had, and he put him in the rear as the reinforcement. And then he got everybody set and steadied them, and as the British started attacking the forces, he had a solid defense. Washington had a solid defense. He'd inspired the guys just like he had done at the Battle of Princeton. And so they were formed, they were fighting. Everything was going good. It was going back and forth a little bit. Everything was hot. There were more casualties from heat than there were from bullets in Canada.
Do you know what was the temperature that day? Do you know?
I don't know what it was. I don't know if they had, you know.
Oh, right.
but I know it was really bad, and they were just falling out. They were taking their jackets off, and they were continuing to fight. And then one of the things that really helped save or make the defense more effective was they moved Green to the right-hand side and put his cannons over there with Knox, and they could fire into the side of the British as they attacked, which was very effective. And so the British eventually left the battlefield towards the end of the day. They left the battlefield, and the Americans were left there with the battlefield. And what it showed was that the Americans were now an effective force, and they could stand toe to toe with the British forces, and they knew it. And so that was the last battle, the last major battle that was fought on the north, in the northern part of America, during the Revolutionary War. They did not want to face the Americans again there. And so that turned out to be a really good battle. The training and you know, having them come down and occupy Philadelphia and then go back, put them in a really bad position, and with the French Army and the French Navy being there to keep them off the sea. And so this turned out to be, 1777 turned out to be a very, and this is 1778 when we're talking about Monmouth with the first part of it. This turned out to be the time that really turned the tide in the American Revolution.
Oh my gosh, Ben Martin, this is absolutely fascinating. So appreciate this show brought to you by the Harris family. Can't wait until next month as we continue on. And again, here's this little army, people that didn't give up, that were fighting against the most powerful empire in the world. So Ben Martin, thank you so much.
Oh, you're very welcome, Kim. I enjoyed it. Thank you. Thank you, too.
And our quote for the end of the show is from George Washington, who he said, 99% of failures come from people who make excuses. So my friends today, be grateful, read great books, think good thoughts, listen to beautiful music, communicate and listen well, live honestly and authentically, strive for high ideals, and like Superman, stand for truth, justice, and the American way. My friends, you are not alone. God bless you. And God bless America. Through the mountains climbing, twisting, turning further from my home. Young, like a new moon rising, fierce. Through the rain and lightning, wandering out into this great unknown. And I don't want no one to cry.